Accession number 11907, reel 2.
Mr. A. Wollaston, reel 2.
Micro evacuated, and we sheltered in the lee of the V formed by the two tanks. The guns, enemy guns, moved and knocked out three more of our tanks, which were no more than 150 yards away. And eventually a young German soldier came and took us prisoner.
Can you remember what he said or what
Hand a hock.
What was his demeanor?
Very scared. I think he was more frightened of us than we were of him.
He was just by himself, was he?
Yes. Some officer had just sent him round, I would think. For when we went back round the other side of our tanks, as we went round the other side of the tanks, it was obvious a battery of heavy field guns. The officer disarmed us. We were all armed with 38 pistols and herded us into a small area, that being about six, I think, by then. Some of the tank crews that had been knocked out and survived walked towards the guns and were taken prisoner. We were then put on the gunner from the tank command. The troop commander's tank had a 20 millimeter through the calf of his leg and was in very severe pain, and I got a bamboo canvas type stretcher off our tank with the permission of the German officer, and we bundled him in this. But unfortunately the Germans loaded him into the half track on the floor head first, which meant that the broken part of his leg was hanging over the back, and despite the fact that it was in a bamboo stretcher, all we had on the way back was screams of agony as we went over every bump. We were then handed over to the Italians after we'd spent the night with the Germans, and they took us to a prisoner of war assembly area east on the coast, somewhere east of Tobruk, where we spent a few days.
Was there any difference in the way the Italians treated you from the way in which the Germans treated you?
Yes, definitely. With the Germans, we were given, the six of us were given a tent, and we were all given blankets, so that we spent a reasonable night, but we had nothing with the Italians, just sat out in the open all the time. One very small tin of tinned meat between two of us a day. Very little water. And after about 4 or 5 days, the Italians decided to evacuate all prisoners of war to Benghazi. We were lined up in column, I would think about 500 or 600, with an Italian soldier on the flanks, Italian soldiers on the flanks. It was a long journey. It should have been a long journey, but before the war, in our lectures, we were always told the best time to escape was when you were taken prisoner in the front line. So I decided that Benghazi was too far for me to walk, as I wasn't an infantryman, and I decided that at the first opportunity, we, that's my crew, Trooper Davis, a Trooper Long, and a Trooper Routledge, and I had a chat with them and said, at the first opportunity, if I give you the signal, we're off. During the night, a Wellington bomber came over, very low, and as we were well inside enemy territory, presumed we were a column of enemy infantry, and started to machine gun. So I grabbed my crew and we ran off into the desert for about a quarter of a mile or so. And unfortunately, two armed Italian soldiers had spotted us and ran with us, so we were back with the column. But the next day, we were assailed on two sides, the north and the south, by our own artillery and machine guns. We were, in fact, passing through a narrow gap between the Tobruk garrison and our land forces in the desert. But it hadn't quite closed by then, and the chaos caused by these 25 pounders and machine gun was pretty horrific, and there were bodies lying about all over the place, Italians screaming at us to get up and march. And we had what I took to be a 25 pounder shell land very close to where my crew and I were lying, and we were covered in sand, dirt, dust, and I told them to lie doggo and feign death or bad injury, and we got away with it. The Italians rounded up all those that were willing to be rounded up and marched off with what was left of the column, and we waited, I suppose, 20 minutes, half an hour, without moving. And eventually we stood up and waved to the south, the desert to the south, and were lucky enough to be picked up by a couple of guardsmen in a 1500 weight truck.
Which guards regiment did they come
from? I think it was the Coldstreams. Yeah. And they, of course, funneled us back to Cairo, where we were re-equipped.
And this was all in November 1941?
That was the November push, yes.
What do you remember happening next?
I spent time in hospital, off and on, with severe dysentery. In fact, of the 7 doses I had, it turned out that none of them had been cured. I'd just been closed up and the dysentery bug was still there. Off and on, I was up the desert, back to hospital, up to the desert. The I was on my way up to the regiment when the Knightsbridge battle took place, so I didn't take part in that. And again, I was in hospital with a huge carbuncle on the back of my neck caused by bad food, I suppose, bad living, when Alamein took place. So I picked up the regiment just after Alamein. Before we reached Tripoli, I had been promoted to Warrant Officer Class 2 and posted to 10th Armoured Brigade Headquarters as the Sergeant Major. And we then followed through to Tripoli. We went on the left hook with the New Zealanders at was it Marath Line? The yes. Marath hook, and then carried on straight up through Sfax, Sousse, etc. to Tunis.
What do you remember about being with the New Zealanders on that left hook?
At brigade headquarters, not a lot. We didn't, as the administration side of brigade headquarters, we didn't see an awful lot of action personally. You could see it happening up front, but we felt reasonably safe, as by then the air cover was pretty good, so one felt pretty safe.
Who was the brigadier in command?
That was Brigadier Harvey, Roscoe Harvey. I think he was a cavalryman. I don't know what regiment, but that was Roscoe Harvey.
How did he run the headquarters?
Good lad. Very, very good officer. Yeah, excellent. In fact, I teamed up with him again with the 29th Brigade. Before I say that, after Tunis fell, we as a brigade were sent back to Tripoli, and we were then asked for 1,000 volunteers of all ranks to be sent home to England to reinforce units that hadn't seen action before going over to D-Day. And jokingly, I said to my lieutenant, well, that's got to be you and me, two from the brigade. And I hadn't realised he'd put our two names down. And within 48 hours, I was told to pack my kit and get on the train.
Before we leave North Africa, what was your opinion of the German panzer divisions in North Africa?
Highly respected as fighters. Very good, very, very tenacious, very good. In fact, I think that we were on a par. We were on a par. But I would hesitate to say that their officers were better than ours, which I had a sneaky feeling they were sometimes.
That the German officers were better than the British?
Yeah, I had a sneaky feeling that they were at times. We had, you see, when I was taken prisoner of war, the officer we had then was a lieutenant, I think he was 40-ish, straight from civilian life. Yeah, he really hadn't got a clue. If he'd have gone straight through between those guns and then we'd have swung round behind them, the battery would have been destroyed and, you know, the action would have been over. But that, I think that's, you know, by the by, in my memory.
When you had that brief contact with the Germans at close quarters when you were captured, did any conversation pass between you?
Not really. They were too busy beating off the final phases of the attack. The officer was issuing orders very hurriedly to his guns and gun crews. No, we didn't talk.
Did you hate the enemy in the desert?
Did I?
Hate the enemy in the desert?
No. No.
What did you feel towards them?
Very neutral, really. It's difficult, after all these years, to recall one's feelings, but being young, we thought we could beat them, and when we started getting American aid and American tanks, we knew that we could beat them. And it was a sort of hard luck, chum, you're on the losing side, more or less. I don't think I ever felt fear as such. I don't think we ever realised the consequences of whatever action we took. The only fear that I can ever recall was with the aeroplanes in Greece, where they were coming over at 50, 100 feet and just spraying everything with machine guns. But other than that, exhilaration more when you go into a tank battle, especially with the fast Hunnids, was very exhilarating. We had a tank round us. I would like to point out here that we lost an awful lot of tank commanders, especially officers, who would not put their head inside the turret. And I put down my survival to the fact that I never put my head outside. It's, to me, it's sacrilege to be killed by a 303 bullet when you're inside a tank. It's as simple as that.
So why did they do it?
God knows.
Bravado?
Not so much bravado as lack of training. If you watch present-day tank crews training, they very, very seldom train closed down. I've been watching the Gulf War, and they've all got their heads stuck out the top. Piece of shrapnel, bullet, sniper's bullet. In those days, we used to train with an arrowhead formation, the troop of three tanks. And the troop sergeant was always on the left, the corporal was always on the right, and the troop commander, who was usually an officer, was always at the point. And it didn't take the Germans very long to realise this formation. So the first chap they went for was the point tank, and nine times out of ten it was the troop officer that disappeared. I had a very great friend in the desert who won a DCM. He was commissioned, and he was a week later he was at Knightsbridge with his head stuck out the turret, and he was killed by a piece of shrapnel half inch across, straight through the back of his neck. And I fear we lost an awful lot of officers like that. And then they turned it round and said, right, this, because we're using so many officers, we'll put the sergeant in the point tank. So we then started losing a few sergeants.
What was the worst aspect of fighting in the desert as far as you were concerned?
The heat and lack of water. We were very, very low on water at one time. And we used to spray fire extinguishers into a metal mug to cool it, then tip that out and pour a mouthful of water in it, which made it icy cold, and wet our lips that way.
Did the arrival of Montgomery have much of an impact on you?
Yes. Yes, he appeared to know what he was doing. He told us what he was doing, and he did it. It's as simple as that.
Did you meet him personally?
Only when he would come to the unit and stand on a box and say, "Everybody come round me." That's the only time.
Do you remember anything he did or said?
Oh yes, he explained exactly what the enemy were doing, what he was going to do, and as I say, he did it. It was as simple as that. When we got to Tripoli, we saw Churchill there, of course. He came through, and they both told us how well we were doing and thanked us for what we'd done. And we're now carrying on to Tunis.
What was the attitude towards Rommel in the 8th Army?
Highly respected. Highly respected as a general. I think we thought at times he bore a charmed life, the little scrapes he got out of.
Did you know the numbers of the panzer divisions you were fighting against?
Yes. The 10th and a light regiment, which I can't recall. There were the 10th Panzer was the main one, with the Mark 4s, Mark 3s and Mark 4s.
How did the fighting in Tunisia compare with the desert?
Very little difference, because, as you know, the coastal plain is a bit verdant, but the majority of the country is desert anyway, and the towns were few and far between. I think I can remember Sousse and Sfax, but they weren't defended. The Germans did not defend them. They would prefer to the Marath line, for instance, and the hills. They always defended a gap in the hills, but it, very little different from the desert.
Did you come across the Americans in Tunisia?
No.
Can we go on now to Northwest Europe, and can you continue with the story of what you did there, please?
Yes. Could you? Northwest Europe, we went into Normandy. That's the 29th Armoured Brigade of the 11th Armoured Division. I was Squadron Sergeant Major of the 29th Armoured Brigade. We still had Brigadier Roscoe Harvey as the Brigadier, and General Roberts was the Division Commander, and General Horrocks was the Corps Commander. A wonderful combination, those three. They really were good. I can remember landing in the dark on D plus six, seven.
Can you describe the landing?
Yes. The landing ship we were on, we were accommodated between the two outside walls of the ship, and the bunks were probably a couple of feet wide, and the gangway was, I should think, less than 2 feet, so it was very, very claustrophobic. But we eventually beached the ramps down, and as we drove our vehicles off, my vehicle was an American Jeep, and we were being heavily bombed. And in the dark, whilst looking up at the aircraft, I drove straight into a shell crater, or a bomb crater. But we managed to get out, and from then on it was hard going. Harbour, we'd leaguer up one night in an orchard of some sort. The Bocage country was very hard fighting because the banks sometimes were as high as the top of a tank, and to put a tank down a lane was suicide with the German anti-tank gunners stuck in the hedgerows. The next impressions I get were the battle for Caen. Which was a case of such heavy bombing. I think this has been mentioned in the Gulf War, that the bombing was so heavy that the advance of the tanks and vehicles afterwards was very, very difficult and hindered. The tanks made it, but the B echelons with the supplies found great difficulty. The craters were almost touching each other. We had 4,500 aircraft in the air. That's something like 1,000 American heavy bombers. It was 1,000 Stirlings and Lancasters, Flying Fortresses, and then there was 1,500 fighter bombers and 1,000 fighters, Spitfires, that sort of thing. And that went on most of the night, and we advanced, I think it was around mid-morning, and it just was absolute chaos. And all the Germans had done was withdraw their 88 anti-tank guns, 88 millimeter tank guns, to a ridge south of Caen, and we were just stopped in our, the advance was stopped in our tracks. We were just stopped in our tracks after one would have thought 4,500 bombers would have cleared the place, but all it did was ruin Caen and hinder our advance. So there was a lesson learnt there.